Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
Welcome to the War Master Podcast, episode 143, with Barry and John from Cromedy Forge.
Hello, how's it going?
Hello, are you? You're all the way up in the Granite City, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, up far north. The coastal district of Cromarty, and in Aberdeen, where we're still in almost full lockdown.
I'm trying to remember the name of the cinema that I worked at in Aberdeen. I'm sure it was called the ABC or something. Or was it? I'm sure it was.
Oh, I think there used to be an ABC. There isn't anymore.
I'm sure there isn't anymore. Maybe it was on Union Street or something like that.
God, so when were you up here?
Oh, 93 for a year.
Oh, right. All right.
Then I went to Glasgow for a couple of years.
Okay. University here?
My girlfriend did a postgraduate in Aberdeen, and I just went up because I had nothing to do. So I went up there and got jobs while she went to university. It was an interesting place, Aberdeen. I tell you, I mean, they weren't overly friendly to the English, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough.
In the early 90s. Yeah, it's a good place.
Yeah, it's probably not changed massively. Yeah.
Right, so John's come on kindly to talk about his Kickstarter and his 3D printing and his 3D sculpting, which I find it's like magic. It's like great. I've got no artistic talent whatsoever, so I'm in awe of anybody that can do anything, and to do it to the level you can do, it's great. Were you trained in it at one point or something?
No, not at all. I'm entirely self-trained. So everything I've learned from YouTube videos, art books, pencil sketching. I've got a physics background. I did a degree in physics and then came to Aberdeen to work in the oil industry. Wow. And then basically an opportunity came up to take some money off the oil company, say goodbye, and set up my own business. I took that with both hands and jumped from a hobby of doing stuff into trying to make some miniatures which people might enjoy.
You definitely picked the right time, because this year I guess there's quite a few of them getting not so quite nice offers to be made redundant effectively.
I think that industry is it's always had its ups and downs, so and I think that's probably the reason why the people who are still in it get paid what they get paid. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting time.
One of the craziest stories of the whole madness we're in was there was a point for a few days where they were having to pay people to take oil. Oil had value.
Yes.
And that's just... Yeah.
can you store this black stuff for me, please? We're not sure what to do with it. Yeah,
I've got nowhere to store it. I can't pour it into the sea. It's got to go somewhere. Yeah. I'll pay you to have it.
Yeah, you might want to put the cigarette out. Yeah,
that's how mad the world was. But the other crazy thing I've heard recently is they're talking about negative interest rates potentially happening. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means they pay you to borrow money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got a cunning plan.
or I have to pay to give you money to look after. You see?
Yeah. Okay. Funny old world macroeconomics.
That is a funny
how the world could be remade.
That was my degree. I did economics, but it turned out when I had no idea that economics was such a vague science, if it is even a science. It's just like philosophy with numbers. It's just.
I like that definition. Yeah, I've been reading quite a lot of economics books while listening to them whilst I sculpt. So, it's a fascinating world.
Yeah, I quite like The Undercover Economist. If you read him, he's kind of
very much so. Yeah. He used to work for Shell.
And he has a podcast called More or Less. If you want a statistics podcast out there, anyway.
Yeah,
numbers.
He also does another one. Something about the cautionary tales. That's it. That's a good one.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. So, what have you? We've got a Kickstarter running at the moment, so we might as well start there. we go.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the amazing Cromedy Forge, the third Kickstarter, Pictish Woodlanders, available until June 25th on Kickstarter.
Is that is the first time you've had an artist in to help you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Laura Jacob. She does some really fantastic chimeral work, sort of putting different animals together. We had a long conversation over what we would see as an alternative to an elf, a wood elf, and we came up with sort of ideas like Shire horse feet and an entirely female army, and ideas of how they would live in the wood, and splitting up the two different sorts of, because the wood elf army in Warmaster is effectively two armies. It's split right down the middle. You got the sort of elfy bit, and you got the woody bit, or the tree man and stuff. And so we really want to give a different flavour to each of those. So I got her to put together two pictures to develop those and see what they look like whilst I was putting together the Vampire Viking Kickstarter. And then basically, yeah. So that idea. That's where a lot of the ideas flowed from, and then sort of pulling that together as an entire race of stuff. That's where sort of centaurs and the centrads and stuff like that came from.
Ah, it really is impressive stuff. One question that kind of strikes me that you do differently to virtually anybody else is you decided to do strips of miniatures rather than individuals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does your caster love that, or do they hate that? Because casting strips I've never found easy at all, ever.
No, he's quite happy with it. We play with it. So I mean, for instance, in the most recent range, there's two sets of archers. So there's like the classic woodlander archer. And then there's the ranger, the one who's got I can't remember what it's called in the
Waywatcher, the kind of Waywatcher, the super archer, okay.
Yeah.
They used to have two attacks each, they were so good.
Yeah, exactly. So they got two arrows in there. So I started off I welded together the Waywatcher ones. So you got two sets of two on the strip. And then on the other ones, I've put them in with just sets of two on the strip, so they're just ready to go on the base. I don't know exactly why, but I ended up doing it two ways at the same time. And just handed them over. And he got more strips in the mold with them welded together than with them separated. Although he said before he was molding them, he said, there'll be no difference. I'll get the same in both. So there might be wisdom to the way that the original War Master miniatures were made. Maybe there's a cast for there.
There definitely is. I just find that for every one that comes out perfect, there's another two that comes out with like a spear tip missing or some. They're just difficult to vent properly.
That's definitely true. The losses are probably higher because. As I'm picking through the models at the end, if there's one with a bit which is not quite right, then you have to throw away the entire strip rather than throwing away a single model. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
But people do love that. I'll tell you now, people love that aesthetic of a strip, where it's like you paint it as a strip, you mount it as a strip. They love it. And I get asked about it all the time why I don't do it. And it's just like I'm not technically able. I'm kind of self-taught like you. So
yeah.
So it's like. Maybe one day I could do it, but it's not now.
No, I think it is better if you can do it individually, because as you say, you get less wastage. That makes sense. But yeah, I it came just from that's what I was used to with playing War Master from days of old. And I didn't even think about it. I just rocked up to the cast and said, "Can you cast these?"
Well, it worked.
learning all the way.
I'm pretty sure nobody but you does it. I'm pretty sure everybody else is like single miniatures. I think maybe Polar Fox do a few like that, and a few single, if I'm thinking right. But
yeah. No, I think the Forest Dragon also doing it on strips.
Okay, but that's a slightly different. Yeah, a slightly different thing. That
they don't have to go through the casting process, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So. I'll tell you what, your Kickstarter runs until, is it the 25th? Have I picked that date right?
Hang on a second, I've got it wrong.
I recorded the whatever it was, the commercial at the weekend. So I'm sure it's the
20th. Well, I think it actually runs to the 18th. It could be the 25th. Will be the 25th because it's got 2 weeks to go.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Well, I was right. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking when I was recording it, the advert's only going to last a couple of weeks, then I'll have to record something else because it says that. So I'll tell you what people would be really interested in is if you could talk us through like what it is you do 3D sculpting wise, because I think most people understand how green stuff sculpted. You just need good eyesight and really good fingers. And magnifying glass maybe, and I don't think anybody really understands 3D sculpting unless you've seen it being done. So maybe you could show us a picture of something or something you're working on, or
let's see if this connects up.
Ooh.
So this is working in ZBrush or ZBrush, sorry, as they anytime I've ever spoken to an American and call it a ZBrush, they just piss themselves. What?
Is this a commercial piece of software then, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's one of the fantastic bits of software where you are actually still able to buy and own the software, so you're not sort of paying a monthly subscription for it,
right.
which I deeply appreciate. And basically, the idea of this is that let me just sort of go back up to
let me just say while you're doing this, I cannot physically believe how many icons are on this screen. It's crazy. There is so much stuff going on the screen.
There is a lot. It is a big screen. I'm working on a 32-inch monitor, so it is quite big. So the idea of ZBrush is that you're basically working with like a lump of clay, and you're sort of adding to that clay or digging into it, and then doing this you can create sort of shapes and forms which you can use to make whatever model you want to make. So in its raw form, basically it's very much like sculpting a piece of clay. You've got the lump of thing and you do something to it and stuff pops out and all sorts of fun and games occur. What's a bit different is obviously there are sort of brushes, we'll refer to those as brushes, which are included or which you can build yourself, which allow you to sort of just draw out shapes into what you're drawing. Now, I'm going to try something, and it's probably, because I'm live on this, it's probably going to crash it. But let's go for this anyway. So one of the things I made for the Woodlenders project was a rabbit brush. And just allowed you to, it's a terrible one, but yeah, it just allows you to draw out rabbits on your object.
What? What is this alchemy? So you don't have to make it up. You've now just got like different rabbits you can just stick anywhere forever.
Yeah, exactly.
A rabbit, like a sticker machine for rabbits.
Yeah, exactly. So there's some squirrels.
Yeah, squirrel brush. Brilliant.
One which I got slightly carried away with on some of the models is a mushroom brush. I've got to be careful about this one.
For sure.
you can put mushrooms in the corner of your models and have fun like that. So that's part of what it does. So you can start with. So there's projects which are created in background here. So this is a stylized body, like a starting point. So I sculpted this guy from scratch. And then you can use sort of different modeling tools to play around with him, change his pose. And so you can sort of create all sorts of bits and bobs, monkey about with it until you get to something which is in the right sort of position as you like it. And then you can pop armor onto him, which you sculpted elsewhere, and then sort of mold those around, which is why you end up with, so you typically, or the way I typically work is I'll make a few sculpts, sort of base sculpts for something, and then repose them into different positions so that you've got the multiple elements we're going to strip. And so yeah. the strips end up looking different enough from each other that they're interesting. I try to get it to the point where in a bag of miniatures it's possible to have every strip being a unique strip, although obviously they're random, not entirely randomly packed. I try to make them as diverse as I can, but you end up sometimes with doubles of strips but the idea really is you don't want to give someone sort of, you know, I do remember in Warmaster sort of getting some packs and you open them up and it's got sort of four strips which are identical, a starting strip and something else. And so there you go. As I was saying, the screensaver for ZBrush is a little bit dodgy. I promise you, this is not my artwork.
So I guess this is the kind of thing that rewards you the more time you put into it, because you'll have a bigger library to draw on. So everything should get quicker to do because you've got more resources to pull on, more bits of army you've already done, more...
Yes and no. As with anything that you which you've probably worked with pieces of software in the past, where, you know, even the Word document, yeah, so you're writing a Word document and then you've saved a certain element, and then, you know, a year later you sort of think, oh yeah, it's exactly what I wrote. Do you dig it out or do you just type it again?
Maybe.
You get to the point where it can be easier just to start from scratch and do it again than to sort of dig it out. A lot of what I find is, as I look back on work which I've done in the past, there's things which I'm still happy with, but there's always elements which I'm like, oh yeah, I could have done that differently. But there's also a matter of speed. You get faster at putting things together and doing things in a different way. Part of the hard part is to actually make time to sit down and continue trying to learn. So sort of looking at watching videos and watching other people and how they do things differently, so as you can try and expand your own skill set and do things in a better way. If you keep on doing things the same way, then it ends up getting both boring for yourself and also artistically boring. So, you know, you've got to sort of keep things moving on.
But it's good to have your own kind of creative style, because then people can say, oh, this is a Comedy Forge piece of kit, because you can
absolutely
what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even if you're not attempting to have a style, You find that there's just ways that you do things which creep through, and they show up, and it's usually when someone else says to you, "Oh, you always do this," when you suddenly realise that is your style.
That is your style.
So, all right.
I'll tell you one thing. I was in Bruno before the madness started. I gave out one of your. It was a mammoth, but
yeah,
the base of the mammoth was some crazy piece of terrain that you'd made because it needed a reservoir, and you decided to make this reservoir into some, like a funeral pyre or something. It was crazy.
It was an idea which I came up with the guys who do my casting, Scotia Grendel. They're a great bunch of guys. They live just down the road, 20 miles away, so drive down, hang out with them and doing casting work with them. So I've done a bit of casting myself. Done a bit of casting work with them, and as you're sort of working things through, you realise that there's bits of, you know, rubbish which come out when you're making a model, and we sort of had this joint eureka moment of, couldn't we do something with that which would be useful? And so, well, I don't like to advertise it because, you know, if a cast comes out and the model's okay, but the reservoir is broken,
then you can't throw it away.
That is going to go out. I'm not going to throw that away.
Because it is an enormous piece. The thing is an enormous piece, the mammoth, and the reservoir is massive.
Well, I mean, the bigger the reservoir, the more pressure you put into the piece, and actually the better cast ability you come out with the piece.
Is that something you're doing or they're doing?
I do it myself, yeah. So I'm
using a pressure pot?
Oh, sorry, no. But yeah, so yeah, they're doing the casting.
Right.
So yeah, they use both compression and decompression.
Vacuum and pressure.
Yeah.
So I do have the vacuum kit at home, but I don't have the pressure kit. So it's kind of, whenever I try and do it, it's like still hit and miss. Even with no air bubbles, you still get problems. So.
Yeah, no. Resin molds, they take longer to get right. I've got downstairs about 7 or 8 kilos of woodlanders, which are all, you know, ready to go, bagged up, split and ready. But it's the resin casting which is sort of going on at the moment, and we're refining those molds and getting them good. They'll be ready by the end of this Kickstarter. So yeah, that's all. It takes a bit more work, takes a bit more tweaking, and it could just be that, you know, Robbie's got, the guy, especially Grendel's got 30, 40 years of experience with the metal casting, and the resin casting is a bit sort of newer, so yeah, it takes a bit longer to get it right.
And also, they tend to be bigger pieces, more complex pieces that you're doing in the resin, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the molds. I mean, basically, the materials work better in resin. When you go in large, you want it to be something which is in resin. It's both for weight of packing, but also you'll know from casting yourself, just the heat which you're transferring into the mold when you have a really big piece damages the mold and can sort of wear things rather rapidly.
Oh yeah, I mean, for a big piece like that, not only would there be the heat damage, but you could actually start tearing the mold because the centrifugal force is pulling at the mold constantly with the big lump.
Exactly.
Your mold wouldn't last hardly any time.
So you'll see that, you know, the original dragons which Games Workshop did with Warmaster are all quite spindly, long and thin, quite elegant pieces. My wood dragon, if you put it down, it dominates. It's huge. It's
okay. There is a thing called an emperor dragon, which I've seen in the flesh. Gert gave one as a prize last year, and that fucking thing is massive. Like it's humongous. So this forest dragon is probably a similar size. Yeah, this wood dragon.
Yeah, it's. I'm just having a look around. I don't actually think I've. If you gave me a minute, I could nip downstairs and grab.
No, but I'll tell you what you can do. You could show me the thing at the back, because it looks like there's a house at the back, a painted house. Is that one of your terrain pieces?
Oh yeah.
So I didn't know you did terrain.
Yeah, it's a new line for me. I don't know if it's getting the right light on that, but
okay.
Yeah, this is. I don't know if you can see that. Yeah, this is.
A little bit further. It's probably better a bit further away, I guess. But yeah, okay. So like Gothic,
that works, yeah.
Germanic, yeah, it's nice.
So yeah, this is actually arranged. So it's something which I put together because friends were coming over to play games of Warmaster, and I suddenly realised I didn't have quite the scenery I wanted on the table. I've always wanted to have a battle with a city, you know, in as part of the table. So I spent a week just, you know, sculpting buildings and putting stuff together. So I made a church and a bunch of houses.
Can people buy those from your shop now? Ready? You make those yourself and you can sell them direct, or?
So you can buy the STL files for these. So you can download the STLs, print them yourself. So this is made out of PLA, which is printed on a fusion deposition modeling machine. So that's like a a classic old school 3D printer. It's like layers of plastic laying down one on top of the other.
So these are the ones that come in the roll, like fishing reel.
Exactly, exactly. So you can pick yourself up a very good quality FDM machine for a couple of hundred quid, $200-300 quid, and you can be, you know, the rolls of plastic will cost you 30 quid. So you could have a city out of, you can get 20 buildings out of a kilo roll. So, you know, once you've got the files, you can fill the table. I've been asked a couple of times whether or not I'll do, if I'll sell them physical models. It takes me a week to print 10 buildings. So
I heard this. I remember Paul once asked one of our friends who's got a couple of 3D printers, but he once asked him to print something out. And I think it was a 28mm piece. And the guy said, it's going to take me a fortnight. I'm going to have to charge you like hundreds of pounds because it's going to... And the chances are over the course of a fortnight, there's going to be something goes wrong with the print. I'm going to have to start again.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there kind of comes a point where you just can't do it any bigger than that because it's just not worth the time and effort and things go wrong.
The reliability is getting better, but no, you're absolutely right. There are limitations on it. I'm in conversations with a guy at the moment who does the 3D printing for on order. So I'm trying to set up an exclusive deal with him so you'll be able to actually buy my designs from his website and get them shipped out to you if you don't have a 3D printer. When it comes to scenery, this is mostly just a sort of, hey guys, look, if you've got a 3D printer, come along, buy some files. They're nice and cheap. You put together a city for yourself and, it's a range I'm going to develop a bit more in the next few weeks.
But it's definitely a great idea to have somebody somewhere you can buy them from, because not everybody has access to a 3D printer and B, the time to learn to use a 3D printer. I think that's the bigger barrier. It's like to a layman.
Yeah, no, I mean, these things, they are getting better, but there's always bugbears. I mean, every 3D printer will have had that moment when they got a piece of kit which is partially dismantled in front of them, trying to work out where the smell of burning is coming from.
from what I understand, the problem is that half the time you're supplied with a bit of software with no idea of how to use this piece of software, and it's like the integral piece of software you have to print your STLs on, and it's like,
yeah. Software. How does this work?
Yeah, I've got no idea. You just spend your whole time printing out stuff you have to throw away from.
Definitely interesting times.
Definitely is interesting times.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment I've got, this is the 3D buildings, the 3D printing buildings are sort of one of multiple ranges at the moment, which are sort of all bubbling along in the background. So I've got the Woodlanders, they're on Kickstarter at the moment for the next couple of weeks. I've just launched on my website an expansion to the Vampire Vikings.
Oh, are you going to show any of that?
I can. It's actually, that was on the screen when we were on the screen share before.
So if you screen share again, we can have a look at that, because people might not even know about that. I didn't know about that.
Hang on a second, I'm going to need to open up another file here. What I've been trying to do, and this has sort of come from, is the screen sharing okay?
I can definitely see the screen. It's just coming.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, yeah, some chariots. Nice.
So this is an idea which came from Christopher Orr, where basically the idea is what do you need to add to a range of models to make it cover multiple armies?
Exactly.
And so, you know, when I released the Vampire Vikings, they fulfilled the Vampire Counts list in the Warmaster Revolutions book. But Chris Warrell said, well, look, if you do a couple of tweaks, if you add a mammoth, some archers, I can't remember what else it was, there was one other thing, then it would cover the Norse list as well.
Yeah.
It was the giant.
The Valkyries. Yeah. It
would be. Valkyries, giant, and the mammoth. So, okay, there you go. And now you've got it covering two lists. So, you know, for one set of expense, but actually probably more importantly, for one set of painting time, you end up with two armies. That's definitely an advantage. And then obviously there's a few elements which are missing, which I can add to that list. And so this is the chariot.
That's nice. And, the chariot. Yeah.
And then there's a.
I'll guess what this is. Yeah.
A trebuchet. Although I think I called it a catapult in the.
That's a nice piece of kit. Can we have a look at the basket of skulls or whatever we've got in there?
I can't make skulls because that'll make it a skull chopper, and I think there's IP on that.
All right, yeah, a head thrower rather than a skull.
We got zombie heads in there.
Zombie head thrower.
Actually, hang on, I need to zoom in even further if you want to see those. I don't know if that's coming across at all.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And then there's the scorpions.
Excellent. So is the plan for these to go and be made into metal at some point then?
So they are metal. I've got bags of them downstairs already. So they're on my website right now. I'll be putting a thing onto some Facebook groups to let people know about them. Hopefully people don't mind me advertising my wares.
I think the great thing about War Master is people are just happy for it to be alive. So, I mean, like, nobody, I've never had anybody have any bad feeling to anybody apart in this business, apart from some people get a bit irate at recasters, but that comes if you're a recaster, unfortunately.
I think that there's always elements of, you know, multiple people creating models for a game. And I think that's been a real change for War Master since, you know, probably about, 2 years, year and a half. All of a sudden, there's people making models for it. One of the lovely things I saw today, someone responding to the Forest Dragon Kickstarter saying, I've seen two or three people now saying that they've got into War Master and they're really sort of stoked and ready to play it. So I think the bigger the fan base, the more people playing it, the more chance that you can actually you get a game and roll dice and play a proper war game where movement is given the right level of attention in the rule set.
Well, it'd be interesting to see when GW restarts the square based stuff, what happens. You might even get more people involved.
It could do. People have could go in different directions as well. It's always always interesting stuff that can happen out there, but yeah, definitely.
Can I ask you not to do Sigmarines, please?
I will not do Sigmarines.
Please,
I can
pretty
promise
please.
You that.
Pretty. Is that, no matter how much people beg you to have, they didn't exist in the old world. Just use Kerb. Different.
Someone was asking about those in Warmaster, weren't they?
They were. I know. Oh well.
So these go live now. They are actually live. And that will let you play the Vampire Vikings as three different armies now. So they'll cover the Vampires, the Classic Undead, and the Norse Army.
Have you got enough big boys for that? You've got like a Bone Giant and Sphinx. You've got things you can use for that when you pull to cross?
People don't
use them very much. People don't use them very much at all, Bone Giants.
Exactly. There's one model missing. So basically, you can use the Frost Giant as either a Sphinx or a Bone Giant, but, you know, you can't use it as both.
I mean, I've played them quite a lot, and I don't use either of them. But
I was going to say, I never use either of them, and the number of times I've seen someone using both of them, I think it's only when you were buying the starter box set, and that's what you needed in order to make the 1,000 points.
A really bad 1,000-point army.
not a lot of fun. So these guys, I don't know how well they'll come across, but these are my Ashiguri Yarai for the Ratmen.
Wow, they're lovely.
So you were talking to Chris Hall about the Nippon list. And then this is an addition which I'm making for the Nippon list. So this is expanding, because at the moment the Ratman, which I do, only covers one list in the War Master book. And then this is to sort of basically return some love to the people who bought into the first Kickstarter by expanding that range, so as it covers the Nippon Trial Army as well. So this is the spearmen who will be coming in.
Wow.
And here I'm doing things a little bit differently. So the command strip, I'll have to cut the command strip up myself, because it's a single strip with three banners on one strip. And hang on a second, I've lost the others. Yeah, there they are. And three samurai on the second strip. So hopefully there's a bit of a lag on there, but there you go. So yeah, okay. that's what these guys look like. I'm also, at the same time, I'm pushing those out. So these are, it's one of the things, you know, when you're screen sharing.
These are not going to Kickstarter. These are just going straight again to the shop, yeah?
Those will go straight to the shop. No, I don't want to kickstart them, because once something's out in the shop, I don't want to re-kickstart it. There was one case which I did with I was selling the Ratmen at the same time as the Vampire Vikings, because I didn't have a shop. But basically, the Kickstarter price is the Kickstarter price, and you get it cheap because it's on Kickstarter, and it's a starting point. What I want to do is to say a huge thank you to the guys who support me on the Kickstarter. And I think that it's a bit rough if you've invested in the Kickstarter and you've shown promise to then see your miniatures being sold at the same price or cheaper after the Kickstarter. It's like, well, okay. So yeah, once it goes on the website, it's on the website. So these are, and I'm going to forget the name of these. These are the, and I'm, forgive me my pronunciation, these are the Komainu. These are the temple guardians,
right?
Yeah.
So I think these are the equivalent, if I remember, of demon hounds. So that's what they were brought in as into the.
I think they're a little bit. I can't remember. I don't know the demon list. They're certainly harder than the chaos hounds.
Way harder than those. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. So in which case, they'll be the equivalent of demons. So they got the sort of slight instability rule in the list which Chris Wall put together.
Brilliant.
So yeah. So that's those guys. I'm working on some flyers right now. And trying to push the limits of what I can do with things raised off the base, but still make them castable. There's the Ashigaru archers, and I've got some Ronin to do. And
they're all going to have a rat overtone, the infantry, all going to have a...
So, yeah, the infantry will all be Ratmen compatible.
Right.
The demon elements, I would like them to be more usable for people who, you know, buying standard human ninjas and so on and so forth, and samurai.
I've already got half of a samurai army, but I obviously don't have any of these kind of more exotic sculpts, because they don't exist. So in the market for those kind of sculpts, but maybe not the samurais, because I already have the traditional the samurai infantry and the Ashigaru and stuff. I already have those. But that's
brilliant. So I'm gonna try and fill your boots with those models, so you'll be able to use them without feeling that they're obviously from a Ratman list.
That would be good. That would be good if you could try and tread, because they're not going to be rats, those kind of things. So they can be kind of more generic fantasy.
Well, exactly. I mean, within the list, there's latitude, because I mean they are otherworldly to the samurai elements of the list anyway. So there's a latitude there to do something which is more useful to more people.
Yeah, so brilliant. So, like, the infantry-based stuff will be kind of rat infantry-based, and then the rest of the stuff will be usable kind of with historical stuff, even, potentially.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that's very, 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 very good. Very clever. Yeah, I like it.
So, so those guys should be available in July. I'm just getting prints off those, testing them out. I'm about halfway through the sculpting process, and so that should happen in July. That will push my Lizardmen work back a little bit, but I think that given the support which Chris Saw has given me through the work I've been doing, I really wanted to get something out there which would help people play the trial samurai list. And I'm also desperate to play it myself, so I'm sort of sculpting for my own.
That was why I did the ogres. There were no ogres, and Jim kind of like converted his own ogre army out of just one unit of ogre warriors that was available. I said, I'm not doing that. That's ridiculous. So then that's why I made ogres. So I actually had an ogre army.
It's the love of the game, you know.
It's got to be. Well, you're not doing it to make money. That's for sure. You're not going to be firing on it.
Don't talk to me about the money. God, I'm crying.
But at least you've got the potential to kind of picture other scales because of the way your stuff works. Obviously, not the metal stuff, because potentially you'd have to redo all the molds and stuff. But with me, it's a kind of destructive process. So the sculpts have gone, and that's the end of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It must be a heart and mouth moment when those sculpts go into the mold, and you don't
it's
know
not when they go in. It's when you open the mold and see what's left, and then you pray that the cavity's good enough to cast out of. I never get used to it. I never get used to it. It's awful. Okay. You've got maybe as much as $2,000 worth of stuff in a mold.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And then you just rip it open and praying.
It's terrifying. I mean, the first time I worked with Scotia Grenville and Robbie was he pulled apart one of the molds. He said, "I took a model to him, and I was like, you know, will this cast?" And it's like, well, yeah, I could probably do. Well, what would I need to change about it to make it really, you know, better for casting? Well, if you could move this to here and move that. And a day later, I came back with the model. It was ready to cast. It was just blown sideways. It was like, you know, oh wow, okay, right, off we go then.
That's not normally how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
So, have you got any art at all on the Lisbon yet, or are we not nowhere near? Have you? Is it because again, are you going to try and move so it covers a couple of ranges? It's going to be Lisbon plus something.
Now is the time to get suggestions into me.
Okay. Lizardman and something. Lizardman and Dark Elves or something. I don't know.
Exactly. So I mean the Woodlanders cover Wood Elves, High Elves, and Dark Elves.
Okay.
So that's three lists straight out of the gate. And then with Lizardman, I sat there and scratched my head, and I've got an Excel sheet trying to work out what works best with what. And bizarrely, I seemed to come up with the idea that the best like for like might be orcs, weirdly, but I don't like that. I don't like the aesthetic for it. And then the other one was, what's the one with Fenbeast?
Albion.
Albion. I think there might be a bit of crossover with Albion. But
you see, I may have mistakenly said that. I thought the Pictish guys could have been used for Albion, but have they got a chariot sculpt?
They do have a chariot sculpt. Yeah, yeah. For the high elves.
There's definitely some chance there then. Definitely some chance for Albion.
They've got a look of Albion about them, especially the chariot being pulled by four doe deer.
Yeah, they're kind of druidy, I think, Albion, I think, if I remember.
I'll need to sit down and see what needs to be filled in to make Albion work, actually.
Albion?
Yeah, yeah, on the Woodlanders. Yeah.
Chariots, many, many chariots.
Chariots coming out, you know. But yeah, so what I was going to do with the Lizardmen was Pharaonic Lizardmen. They're going to be Egyptian Lizardmen.
Nice.
Just because there's such a richness to the culture there that it just feels like it's going to vibe quite nicely and work nicely. There's a spike-tailed lizard, Egyptian lizard, which has got a weird part of my job. I look at lizards to decide which one has got the best kind of face to make a good model. So yeah, there's a spike-tailed lizard in Egypt, which has got a really, really good face for a lizard. So,
I'll tell you what you could do. You could take the two rarest armies and smash them together. You could have like Araby lizardmen, because Araby are so expensive to try and buy, and lizardmen are crazy expensive. So if you can find some crossover between those two, magic carpets and pterodons, they've got kind of flies, they've got big stuff.
Yeah, could do that. I mean, I'm also up for you know, just having a smaller element of crossover, so as you can actually sort of expand your list and get the feel the way that you want it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's certainly interesting. I've been asked quite a lot about Araby. Yeah, I mean, some people ask me to do sort of individual sculpts, like could you just do a flying carpet or just do a camel rider. I'm not ruling it out. I might do that. But at the moment, I get a real buzz off making an entire army which feels coherent and sort of comes together as a whole. The amount of fun I had hiding rabbits and squirrels around the woodlanders was a giggle.
Well, I'm going to have to look for them now.
They're all there.
So, right. Have you got anything else we want to talk about? Well, I mean, we'll definitely have to invite you back, like when you're doing your next one, which is going to be the Lizardman in July.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
July, August?
August, September, fine.
August, September, okay. That's it. That's even better. We might even be allowed out by then.
Oh, that would be a magical moment.
The kids might be at school. I might get some work done for a day.
Yeah, might actually be able to play with the miniatures we've been putting together and painting over the last month.
Imagine being able to play a war game again.
Well, the fantastic stuff I've seen on the Warmaster group with, I wish I had the names to hand, but yeah, all these people putting together these absolutely stunning like cities and villages and, you know, just huge tables full of stuff. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be amazing. Right. Okay, so I think we'll call it a day there, John, if that's all right.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a real pleasure being on the podcast, and I did actually want to say a thank you to you and to Paul for the effort you've put into this podcast and keeping the community going. Very much appreciated.
I'll let you into a secret. He doesn't know I'm recording, so I don't know how he's going to take it. This is the fact. He's not been present, but I was worried about the three-way communication because it could get quite difficult. It was, yeah. One with Chris, it was quite difficult with three. So it's easy, definitely easier with two. Hopefully.
Tell him I'll send him some more chariots.
He's a black hole for stuff. Anyway, so thank you so much, John. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking about everything you do, and keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.
Okay, take it easy. Thank you very much.
Bye for now.
Good night.
Would you like to know more?